You're listening to a Zone Radio podcast, zoneradio.co.za.
This is the Drive Zone on Zone Radio 88.5, the voice of the valley. It's 11 minutes past four, and I'm about to introduce you to a remarkable man. And remarkable is probably an understatement. Now, let me give you some background to this. I'm a member of the Falsware Business Network, and every Friday morning we meet for our sort of business meeting and sort of have a cup of coffee and breakfast together and share sort of stories and referrals and that kind of thing. And every so often we get the opportunity to invite a guest to speak, somebody who has a motivational story to tell. And about, must be about 3 weeks ago, we had the opportunity to listen to the story of Marius Javert, and I want to tell you something. This is an incredible story, so just focus for the next half an hour to 40 minutes as you listen to what this man tells us about his story and the book that he wrote called I Ate a Jeep, and literally he ate a Jeep. And as I say, the story, he starts out by saying the day he died was just the beginning of his journey. Very good afternoon to you, Maurice, and thanks for coming into Zone Radio this afternoon.
Hi, Richard. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a miracle that we are even having this conversation.
Yeah, I suppose this the current part of my journey started about 10 years ago. I was in the hospitality industry for 35 years, and my business was paid for, and everything was going well. My kids were doing well at school and a very happy family life. And I decided to go on an adventure, a cycling adventure from Beitbridge back to Cape Town. And it's a race where you have four checkpoints.
Mm-hmm.
And the one checkpoint is in Swaziland, the second one Lesotho, the third one in Prince Albert. And then the final checkpoint was at Camps Bay in Cape Town. So that was a remarkable event in its own right, you know. So
just getting to the point where you could participate in that was a remarkable journey.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was in great physical shape. I was fit and healthy. And then one morning, on a Friday morning, I went for a training ride with my cycling buddy. And it was 7 o'clock in the morning on a Friday morning. And the trucks got quite busy on the road, traveling up and down between Durbanville and the grain silos. And I told my friend, listen, let's get off the Klipjeville Road and let's go in between the farms on the gravel. It will be safer. And about 20 minutes after that, that's the last thing I really can remember for the next 23 days. So I woke up 23 days later in hospital where I heard this guy's deep voice next to me. And that's the first memory I have. But then in those 23 days, I had gone in between the front wheels of a Jeep. It dragged me over the side of the gravel road. A fence ripped me out from under the car, flung me meters through the air. In the process, I had many injuries. There was two bicycles that went under the Jeep with me, my own and my friend's bicycle. He just jumped off in time. And about 7-8 minutes later, I bled out and I started dying the first time. You know, there wasn't an ambulance in sight. There
on a dirt road, in the middle of nowhere.
I was lying on a dirt road and my kidney had burst open, so I was bleeding out through my kidney. And then a friend, and this is the miracles that happened and the silver linings to the story, is so many things happened that God actually had his hand in my survival and in my recovery. Because I was supposed to ride in a cycling race called the DC. It's a 200K race around Swellendam. And I gave my entry to a friend. And this friend was cycling 500 meters behind us. And he could find a doctor's friend that lived about 10 minutes away from where we were at that point. And this guy came there. The ambulance got lost. They only rocked up an hour and some minutes later. And he had drip bags in his car. Every doctor doesn't drive around with drip bags in his car, and he could resuscitate me and he could keep me going with the drip bags until the ambulance arrived later. So yeah, that was it was an up and down process. I don't remember anything about pain. I don't remember anything about anything. People spoke to me. They moved my legs and my arm. They got my body straight that was mangled up. And I spoke to them during this process. I don't know anything about it. I can't remember anything.
In fact, what you're telling us now is what people have told you.
It's hearsay. It's what they told me.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, I got to hospital. I was too weak to operate on immediately, so they just gave me blood transfusions. And luckily, I got an emergency surgeon. He was a military emergency surgeon working as a locum for the local guy. And he studied all my injuries overnight. And the next morning, with the least invasive surgery, he started putting me together. Fixed my back that was broken, my pelvis that was broken in 5 places. My left arm was nearly amputated, and he managed to put my arm together. I had, after the initial surgery, I had another 5 surgeries on my arm to actually get it functional. But he saved my arm. Mm. He saved that it wasn't actually amputated. So another silver lining, you know. And then a kidney is made to filter your blood.
Mm.
So it's not supposed to clot. And a nephrologist was actually going to remove my kidney the next morning. And when they got to me, a big clot had formed in this burst open kidney. And it stopped the bleeding. So they didn't have to remove my kidney.
And it also means you didn't bleed to death on the side of the road.
Yes, well, the clot formed overnight.
Overnight, okay.
Yeah, so I was still, as they were transfusing blood into me, I was bleeding out. But during that night, this clot formed. And it's not supposed to happen. That saved my kidney. They didn't have to remove my kidney. So then a long process started. You know, I say, 23 days later, I was kept in a coma initially. Then they took me out. They put me into a normal ward. And by that time, the bones have sort of healed. You know, these plates and screws that keeps you together. So they want you to get moving as soon as possible. And they give you pain medication and just tell you to do the exercises another time and another time until you start learning, you know, how to walk again and how to use your arm again. And the biggest injury, though, that was the most difficult part to overcome was my brain injury, because my verbal memory was damaged and my cognitive management functions were managed. So to explain it to you in a simple term, if you give me a story to read, I might remember it 100%. But if you tell me that story and ask me to tell it to somebody else, I might remember portions of it. I might forget the whole story. I might change the story. So my verbal memory works and it doesn't work. So at times it can leave me in the lurch.
Still.
And it can still. I need to breathe. I need to think very intentionally. And after a conversation like this, I'll be very tired. I most probably would want to go lie down for an hour because it takes so much
out of you
mental capacity just to recall all of this, you know. So to go back to the rehab, I think the biggest mistake is that they don't accept that you have a mental injury. And my biggest challenge was over the next 3 or 4 years was to accept the new person that I was, because I had changed now and I still wanted to be the oak I was beforehand.
Mm.
but I wasn't physically that person or mentally that person anymore. And that was the biggest challenge to overcome, because consistently you feel less than. You feel less than the people that you usually participated in things with or did things with. And you forever think that you are not good enough. And the journey to figure out what was the new path for my course was the challenge. I had to figure out what was acceptable for my body and my brain to be able to deal with going forward. And that took the better part of 3 years, 3 to 4 years to get around. So I was in a very lucky situation at that point. My business was paid for, and I had to sell my shares in my business, and I lived for the better part of 6 years on the money that I sold my business for. But then, you know, your money runs out, and then life becomes even trickier. And that's where things started going wrong in my marriage. And about a year and a half into that process, where finances were very hard, we decided that we were better people apart than together. So, yeah, after 30 years of marriage, we got divorced. And that was a challenging time to overcome, because you've kind of run out of money. You're not really in a state where you can start your own business again or go and work for anybody else. And I had to actually move in with my mom. And I took my two boys and I moved into my mom's house.
Wow.
At 50 years of age.
Mm.
You know, so all of a sudden, there goes the mental capacity again, because now you feel less than again, purely because of where you are at that time. And I entered a cycling race about 4 years ago now. And this was a cycling race around Pole Mountain. And it ended off going through Olive Grove, and then you go up past the Spice Route, and it ended at Reboksloof. And as we were going through this Olive Grove, a friend of mine and a friend of his was cycling in front of me. And these two friends were busy speaking about their conversations they have with God. And I told John at that point, I told him, listen, John, you guys talk about your conversations with God. And I've never been lucky to have a conversation with God myself. And he looked at me and he said, listen, Marius, but you know, you must either be deaf or you must be dumb, one of the two, because God spoke to you three times in one morning. And the penny dropped. And this is where a big change in my life happened. Is I developed this relationship with God, which was another silver lining in my life. So I had this chain of finding silver linings during my storm, you know, and this theme came through where I had all these little miracles and little silver linings that helped me along. So now I'm going to go way back to the rehab, because what I haven't told you was at one point I was at a very low point and I was really considering suicide and I was thinking about the darkest things and thoughts you can, because I had all these unknowns and I felt so weak and I felt, you know, you're really injured and you have pain and it's discomfort all the time. And I was sitting crying while I was watching the people doing their Christmas shopping at Tiger Valley out of the window there by the Intercare rehab. And the occupational therapist came in and she asked me, so what's the story? You know, because she saw I was emotional. And I told her that I didn't really have any hope to do sport again and to participate in events, and I was struggling so much and I had a lot of pain. And she said, okay, and she disappeared and she came back a little bit later, and she said that I must follow her. So there I went in my wheelchair.
And that stayed you in a wheelchair?
Well, I was still in nappies, you know, and I was in a wheelchair and I couldn't go to the bathroom myself, and you smell and it's just not lack of space, you know, it's really uncomfortable and you feel bad because people come and visit you and your nappy is smelling and these are things that people that have injuries go through, or people that grow old go through, that other people don't really consider, you know, and that's mentally, it takes a lot of your energy. Anyway, so she had set up a stationary bicycle in the rehab gym, and she told me to get on, and I said, but I can't, stuck in the wheelchair. And she said, no, you can. And she made me struggle, and she made me sweat, and she made me cry that morning, and I eventually got onto the bike. And she told me to turn my legs, and at that point in time, I didn't think my legs could work properly. And I turned my legs on that bicycle, and I didn't have any resistance, but my legs could go around. And that's when a switch flipped in my head, and I realized that I was being my biggest limitation. I should not look at the world and limit myself. I should look at the world and just decide, what am I going to do, and do it. And that young girl, she was still a student. She saved my life, you know, and she changed my life in that instant.
Another silver lining.
Another silver lining. And I had this mindset from there on that I could do anything. So when business ran dry and when my money ran out, I started a little business. Somebody asked me one day, but Marius, won't you drop me off at the airport? And I said, of course, I'm not doing anything. I'm unemployed. And I dropped him off at the airport. And as I was driving home, he sent me a message, what's your bank account details? And I said, why? He said, well, I would have paid Uber. I'm going to pay you. So another penny dropped, and I realized, wow, maybe I should put an ad on Facebook and start doing shuttles. And there I developed a little business out of fresh air, a friend that was just being kind. And that was another switch that flipped in my head and said, well, you know, maybe you can't go back into the hospitality industry, but there's so many other little things that you can do. So I started shuttling, and that's when the book started developing. Was part of my exercises to exercise my brain and to be able to think, because I struggled to read, I struggled to write, I struggled to speak comprehensively in sentences. And part of my rehab early on was to journal. So I had had to think about a topic or a subject, and I had to start journaling about it. And I had a look at these journals, and I thought, wow, but these journals actually are chapters in a book. Mm. There's so many topics that I like, because I journaled about cycling, and I journaled about the outdoors, and I journaled about experiences with friends, and anything that I thought could help me and keep me motivated. And I took my journals and I started editing them a bit, and then eventually I got a professional editor and I asked her to have a look at it, and she helped me to put it into a book format. And I had repetitively told stories. She had to clean it up and tidy it out. Because I wouldn't pick it up, I'd be reading in chapter one, but I would forgot totally what I had said in chapter 15, and maybe it was the same thing. And Brenda was absolutely amazing, Brenda Burgess. She helped me patiently and painstakingly, and she read through the book, and she made suggestions, and she helped me along to actually get it to the book that you had a look at earlier on. So slowly but surely, with all these silver linings and all these little miracles that happen, your confidence comes back. And as your confidence comes back, you think you can attempt bigger projects. And that's really been my story, is that I've been blessed with getting small little projects. And every time that project helped me to find my feet again and to put some pizza on the table and to learn or relearn the old skills and polish them and being able to reapply them. And every time I moved on from a little project, whether it was in the hospitality industry to help somebody to rebrand a store or to start a little outdoor business, I just started a little business called Beach Adventures, where I take people on all sorts of activities, bodyboarding, kelp forest swims, and just outdoorsy stuff that people don't really want to do on their own. And it's been a fantastic process. But I must tell you, Richard, there was amazing people. The community pulled together around me like you wouldn't believe. And it's like they say, it's not just one parent or two parents that raises a child. You know, it's the whole neighborhood, the whole village that raises the child. And that was really my story. You know, people came from out the cracks and the shadows that I had forgotten about. The most unobvious people came into my life and they made such a contribution, not necessarily financial, but just in helping you along and pushing you along and that's...
And believing in you.
Absolutely. Mm. And giving you that opportunity to reinvent yourself, you know? So people must never think they stand alone in life. I think people must really lean on their community, you know, because there's so much love out there. And people can always tell you the bad stories, you know, and the tough stories and the hard stories. But I believe there's so many good things to celebrate in our lives and in our communities. So, yeah, I think if I can mention one little trick that helped me a lot, and I mentioned this at the Fishhook Business Network, is a little acronym that helped me a lot during my rehab and recovery process, was to stop, to breathe, and to think, and then to act. Whenever things were going hard with me and I felt frustrated because my brain didn't want to work immediately or it took me time to think through something, just stopping, just taking time out and just breathing immediately gives you a little bit of headspace again. And slowly but surely that helps you build confidence. And it's a small little mechanism that helps you during hard times. It's just take a moment, just take a moment's time out and just breathe. And think about what you need to do and then you act. If there's
stop,
anything,
breathe, think, act.
Oh, yes.
Mm.
If there's anything I'd like to leave with your listeners, I think is instead of looking at the storm, look at the silver linings. Find those little silver linings in your community and stop, breathe, think, and act.
It's an amazing story. I'm going to ask you one or two questions now, but I just, there are comments coming through here and I didn't want to interrupt the flow. Mm. And one of them is that my glasses are broken, as you can see. an incredible story of the indomitable human spirit and the will to survive. So humbling. And Judy saying that what an amazing story. So many miracles. So many miracles.
Absolutely.
How are your boys?
My boys are great.
Okay.
The oldest one struggled a bit. He struggled because he was in matric. Yes, he was in matric when this happened. And obviously he couldn't go and study. So things went bad for him. He got into smoking weed, and it was a hard time for him. And about a year ago, he came to me and he said, "Listen, Dad, I'd like to go study." And so he started doing agriculture this year at Stellenbosch.
Lovely.
And it's like he got a new lease on life, and he's got this new...
Well, he's got a role model, right?
He's got this new life to look forward to, you know, and it's amazing that it happened for him. Took a lot of prayer and a lot of belief, and I think his silver lining is there. And then my youngest one, he's doing his honors in chartered accounting at UCT.
Wonderful.
So hopefully he'll be licensed at the end of this year.
The reason I ask is because they went with you to stay at your mom, and they went through this journey with you. And it must
They're still living at my mom's.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
And it must have been incredibly difficult for them to look at the person who was like their rock as they were growing up.
Yeah.
And to see that person broken in front of them. But what an incredible lesson for them to see that same person who was broken and so broken.
Yeah.
Rebuild. And that must be something, an incredible thing for them to live. I mean, I'm inspired by your story. Just listen to it on at the network. I was completely blown away. And right now I'm still completely taken. And I'm going to read this book because, you know, we haven't scratched the surface of all the other details, because I think it's an incredible story. But I'm only going to touch on it, okay? Mm. We're going to rub shoulders, and I'm just going to touch on it. Those boys lived with it. What a powerful thing that must be for them.
Yeah, and it must have been so difficult for them going through it in their best years in high school. Was kind of messed up because their dad turned into a veggie for a while, you know. And I was so blessed that they embraced me and they helped me and they...
There's much heroes in the story.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they got on with their lives, you know, and they pushed on. And my youngest went and got himself a bursary.
What are their names?
Joshua is the youngest and Yannick.
Well,
my eldest.
Take a bow, guys. You guys rock. Because I, at some level, also like to think that they would have contributed to your recovery as well. So, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you are driven to look after your family and to provide for your family. And if it wasn't for them, I didn't have that drive to look forward to being part of their life.
Incredible. Thank you, Marius, for sharing your incredible story. I've written down the stop, breathe, think, act, and will endeavor to do this daily. His bravery and fighting spirit is so inspirational. So that was from Judy. The reason I'm stumbling over the words is because from here they are very, very, very double at this stage of the game. But like I say... Marius, I wanted to ask you this. Now, you said earlier on that you're going to be tired by this at the end of this conversation. You're going to probably want to go and lie down because it is still physically taxing on your brain.
Yeah.
And you told us a lot more about the level of injuries, how your arm had how many surgeries?
Well, there was the initial surgery and then there was 5 surgeries later.
And you're still not done.
No, it's finished.
Is it
now.
Done?
Thank
okay.
goodness. Yeah, it's R1 million later.
Okay.
Spent on one arm.
So there was a lot that went on there. When you sit down and speak like you are now, is this a story that because it's similar, is it almost like you have to almost rehearse it in order to make sure that you get all the salient points out? Or is it, do you sit there and struggle with getting it out?
Not at all. No. The day I met you, I was totally comfortable with you and your conversation. So for me to come in here, I wasn't angsty at all.
Ah.
But if I didn't know you and I didn't meet you at the breakfast, it might have been a totally different story.
Okay. Yeah. Because you're looking remarkably calm, and you are looking, you know.
Well, you made me feel calm that first day. You know, so
most people would say I have the opposite effect on them. But anyway, all right. Before we go on to the next phase, is that thank you for coming to share your story, and not only at the network breakfast, because I know everybody there benefited. It's the quietest I've ever seen that room. When there's been a speaker, absolutely quiet. People were mesmerized. And right now, I sat here listening to that story again and again. I think it's just so inspirational. It really is. And somehow people like you walk this earth in order to impact other people's lives. This is the purpose. This is why you had to eat a Jeep.
Yeah.
Because there are people out there that need what that interaction with you. So
absolutely. We
don't know what the bigger picture is. Yeah. But the reason you ate the Jeep is so that other people can feed off the experience. And, you know, we always told that we're only given what we can deal with.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
For a lesser person like me, it might be a completely different story. But you dealt with it. And I want to thank you for coming in this afternoon and sharing that story with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
And with those that were listening. And I certainly hope that those that heard, this will be podcast and people can share it, because it is a remarkable story. Now, this book, where can people get it?
Oh, it's easy. They just go to Amazon and punch in I Ate a Jeep. And it'll take them straight to the book, and they can download it as an audio book, or they can order a hard copy.
All right, and it's about $250, somewhere around there. So it's not. I'm actually looking at one here now. This is on Seller. Okay,
that's a local one.
A local one, and it's R250 on there. So it's going to be thereabouts on any of the other platforms. I would urge people to go out and get. I certainly want to get a copy of it. And then when I've got that copy, I'm going to find you. And make you sign it. Marius, thank you so much. I don't even want to stop this conversation, but we have to, because there's no things like weather, surf and sport and all these important things. But
I'm on my way to go surf.
You're on your way to go and surf. The good news is that you're fully sporting active again.
I'm not as strong as I used to be, so I have limitations. I can't cycle for days on end, I just participate within my limitations, and I enjoy what I do, you know. So I dive and I body surf, body board, I do cycle, I sail. I do a lot of activities, but all within what I can.
What you feel comfortable doing. Yeah. The amazing thing about it is that when you walked into that network meeting that Friday morning, I was looking for a broken man. And you're not. You're actually in better physical shape than I have, and I haven't even been hit by a Jeep, you know. So I haven't been hit by a bicycle.
You see, I've had many years to work at it very, very hard, you know. So fortunately, I had that time available.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing story. Again, I cannot thank you enough for coming in this afternoon. Oh, gee whiz, the messages are still coming in. Hold on. What an incredible story. Thank you, Marius, for sharing your story. Truly hope this man has found love again.
Not yet.
He's a catch, ladies. He's a catch. Marius, on that note, light-hearted as it may be, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. You have idea just how much we appreciate it. And we'll certainly make sure you get a copy of the podcast.
Thank you so much.
His name is Marius Joubert. Go look for his book on Amazon. It's called I Ate a Jeep. And man alive, did he ever eat a Jeep.